going to open the Senate Environment Natural Resources Committee for Thursday, February 12th. Boy, time flies when you're having fun, isn't it? Isn't that true, Vice
yes,
Chair?
Yes, that's true, Madam Chair.
So I just want to let folks know we're actually going to start with Senate Bill 168. We have a lot of people, I know that or quite a few people want to testify on both, and then we'll do Senate Bill 201 after that, and then 195. So we're going to switch the order a little bit. So with that, I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 168. And Beth, could you please give us an overview?
Senate Bill 168 authorizes a state agency to construct and operate a facility for the generation of electricity, permits an agency that generates electricity to sell it as long as it's not sold directly to a customer of a publicly or investor-owned utility, requires that the revenue from the sale of electricity be continually appropriated to the agency that sold it.
Okay. Thank you. And we have Betty Merrill and Ivo Trummer, and then Duke. And Scott. Okay, you can all come up together. She couldn't be here, so you have to mention that she couldn't be here.
Yes.
She's going to hand it in testimony, so you have to say that she couldn't be here. Hey, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Herron. I'm the director of the Department of Administrative Services. With me today is Ivo Trummer, who is a policy advisor in the governor's office, and Betty Merrill, who works for the Department of Energy. Those are the more technical experts. I'm here today to ask your support for Senate Bill 168. During the development of legislative concepts during the interim, a number of agencies put forward a concept very similar to the bill that's in front of you, and the governor's office asked my department to coordinate a single bill and to move it through the process. So that's why we're here today on Senate Bill 68. You have written testimony. I'm just going to hit a couple of the highlights so we can move quickly. State agencies, including universities in the state, use about 500 million kilowatt hours of power every year for their operations. This measure allows state agencies to construct and operate facilities for the generation of electricity using renewable energy sources on their lands and buildings. The governor has established a goal for agencies to use 100% green energy for operations by 2010, and this measure will help us reach that goal. In addition, this measure prevents agencies from becoming new utility companies. In fact, agencies may sell electricity back to the public or investor-owned utilities only and not to the customers of those utilities. By selling electricity to the utilities, agencies may assist those utilities in achieving the renewable portfolio standard goal of providing 25% of their energy from renewable sources by the year 2025. Revenue generated from the sale of electricity will be deposited into the Treasury for the agency who generated the electricity. And we are aware of two amendments that will help agencies to implement this measure. The university system would like to clarify that the measure applies to energy generated in territorial seas. And the Department of State Lands would like to clarify that any revenue generated from their property would be deposited into the Common School Fund. I have provided in my written testimony the specific language for those amendments. In closing, I'd like to say that Senate Bill 168 will allow agencies to participate in preserving the environment, and I seek your support for this measure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Why don't we have everyone go first and see if there's any questions. Ivo?
Yeah, thank you. Judging fellow and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ivo Trummer, and I'm the governor's energy policy advisor. I was planning to be brief. I'll be even briefer since Scott here covered most of what I was going to say. Briefly about the bill, it comes to you as part of the governor's climate change legislative package. It's a series of roughly 10 bills. It focuses on renewable energy. We are hoping that this bill will help state agencies further the goal of 100% renewable energy by 2010. And by giving the state agencies more authority or clear authority with this bill, we hope that the state can become even more of a leader when it comes to renewable energy. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Betty Merrill from the Oregon Department of Energy. The Department of Energy supports the bill, and the bill clarifies that the agencies have the authority to construct renewable energy projects on their lands and properties. The authority to construct the renewable energy is not always clear in the individual agency statutes, so that's why the bill is moving forward, and we support it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for the panel? Senator Boquist?
Quick question, Madam Chair,
yeah.
and maybe Beth has that. It says there may be a fiscal, that's the first question. The second thing, are there any impact on governor's budget? And then the third thing would be, Madam Chair, any planned projects right now?
Whoever wants to answer.
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, on the impacting the governor's recommended budget, this was part of the governor's recommended budget, and I'm not aware of any direct fiscal impact that this measure would cause. There are a number of renewable energy projects that in the pipeline, and perhaps the Department of Energy has a better idea of that portfolio. I know the university system has several projects, and the governor's recommended budget contained some renewable energy projects as well.
And the rest of its questions?
Fiscal?
Yeah, do you want to answer
both? Planned projects.
We have not received a fiscal back on this yet, so I don't have the answer to your question.
And does the Department of Energy know if there's any planned projects, Madam Chair?
Betty, if you can address that.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Boquist, I believe when the bill was put forward, there was a fiscal impact that was included in the governor's budget package. I don't know that it was, that there was a fiscal, but it was included in the governor's package.
Yeah, as a follow-up, I don't know what the fiscal would be for, unless it's Department of Energy time to work with the agency to develop that project.
Chair Dingfelder, I don't believe the Department of Energy had a fiscal impact on the bill. I believe when it went through the governor's budget package, I don't believe there was
a fiscal. We'll make sure and do the fiscal.
Just notes. Looking for whatever planned projects there are.
Yeah, and then any projects that are currently in the pipeline.
Chair Dingfelder, the projects I know that are in the pipeline or at least in the planning stage are the OIT geothermal plant, which is a large one, currently a renewable project that's also under development, actually almost completed, is the Oregon State University Combined Heat and Power Plant, plant, and then a number of campuses. DAS just completed a solar PV project in Pendleton under the 1.5% solar bill that passed in 2007. Public buildings and state buildings are looking at doing solar PV projects on their roof.
And as a follow-up to that, so we don't currently have any projects that, I mean, do we have existing projects that will be affected by this bill? Because I'm curious, if so, then where is the revenue going?
Madam Chair, at this point in time, most of the projects do not produce surplus energy to be sold back. They just offset the energy costs of the facility in which they're being placed. In the long term, as technology improves, that situation may change.
So this is anticipating if there is surplus that it would go into the general fund, or if it's on state lands, it'll go to the common school fund?
That is correct. Or the if it's another fund's agency, it would go into the accounts of that agency.
Okay. Well, what would be helpful is just to have a list of projects that you foresee over the coming biennium so we have a sense of what to anticipate. And that would help put obviously this bill in context of what we're talking about. So
we can provide that information.
Okay. Any other questions? I know where Senator House just joined us. We're on 168. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you. And we just have a couple other folks that would like to come up. Do you want to mention that we had somebody sign up who couldn't stay, and she submitted testimony?
Actually, give it to Natalie, sorry.
Okay, Natalie, so just to let you know, Renewable Northwest Project, Suzanne Lita-Lyon, she couldn't stay, but she submitted written testimony, so if you can make sure the committee members get that, appreciate it. And then Steve Purchase from the Department of State Lands.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingenfelder, members of the committee. Steve Purchase, Assistant Director for the Department of State Lands. I'm going to keep my comments fairly brief since I did submit written testimony for you. We're in support of this bill because this bill is something that we're very, very involved in, And we currently do have one energy company that has a met tower on our state properties that is testing the wind currents and all the things necessary to find if it will be feasible for them to build a large-scale wind farm on our state land. So this bill, we certainly already have the authority to do what this bill does, but we're going to support the amendment that makes it clear that the revenues from this project would go into the Common School Fund, and that would be used to benefit K through 12 education when we do our distributions. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Well, anything we can do to improve or expand the Common School Fund, personally, I think is a good thing. So that's good to hear. How big is the project, by the way, that's being proposed?
Chair Dingenfelder, right now we have one Met Tower, and the project that is proposed, if the wind currents and everything are acceptable, will be 1,800 acres.
But do you know how many, like how much energy?
We do not yet at this point know that.
Okay. Kilowatts. Okay. Questions?
Good
questions. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Last up, we have Todd Wynn, Cascade Policy Institute. If you have writing, if you can submit it, and please just summarize your testimony if you have written testimony.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Todd Wynn. I'm the Climate Change and Energy Policy Analyst with Cascade Policy Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan public policy research organization. Now, though this bill seems harmless, the bill has vast implications and could significantly increase the cost of energy for state agencies. The goals have created an obvious, difficult position for government agencies to reach the renewable energy goals. Either renewable energy certificates would need to be purchased to offset the non-renewable energy that is used, or the agencies would need to be able to produce their own renewable power in the form of solar panels, wind turbines, or other acceptable forms of renewable energy. These options happen to be prohibitively expensive and thus are quite difficult to achieve. First, the definition of renewable is quite a problem in meeting the goal. The goals completely eliminate any renewable energy built before 1999 for no apparent reason. And using a more realistic definition of renewable would reduce this challenge considerably. Now, state government agencies use approximately anywhere between 400 to 500 million kilowatt hours of electricity annually. And if RECs were purchased to meet the 100% renewable energy goal, the Oregon government would have to pay anywhere between $8 million to $14 million more in electricity costs per year, which represents a 33% to 58% increase in electricity costs for state agencies. Now, instead of purchasing RECs, they could operate and maintain their own renewable energy generation. And there is a project that's kind of a perfect example for this. It's the ODOT Solar Highway Project, which is a 104-kilowatt solar photovoltaic system, and it's expected to produce approximately 112,000 kilowatt hours annually at a full cost of 58 cents per kilowatt hour. So in order for all state agencies to reach this 100% renewable energy goal at a full cost rate of 58 cents per kilowatt hour, the state would be paying $208 million more annually than it currently pays, which is approximately 10 times higher than current electricity costs. Even assuming solar power costs 20 cents per kilowatt hour, which is a more than fair estimate, the state would still have to spend $56 million more per year for electricity, which is over three times higher than current electricity bills. Now, a cost increase of this magnitude would mean that other government programs would lack funding, or there would need to be a large tax increase on already economically burdened Oregonians. We should not allow the governor to buy his way out of the self-imposed dilemma at a taxpayer expense. The solution is to repeal the executive order and admit it was a bad idea to begin with.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions? Senator Boquist? I can't really see Senator Rose. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 168? Okay. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 168. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 201. And we have Evo Trummer again. We lost Evo. Dan Elliott, then, and Peg McGuire. You guys can all come up together. Evo, why don't you start off? And I'm sorry, Beth, just give us a brief introduction.
Senate Bill 201 directs the Housing and Community Service Department to establish a program to provide funding for energy efficiency improvements in housing for people with low income and very low income. Requires that funds are only provided when matched with an equal contribution related to energy efficiency.
Okay. Thank you. Eva, why don't you get started?
Thank you. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Ivo Trummer. I'm the Governor's Energy Policy Advisor. I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 201. Again, I want to be brief since the Department of Housing and Community Services will speak in more depth and detail about the technical aspects of the bill. Again, this bill comes to you as part of the Governor's climate change legislative package. Its intent is to focus on energy efficiency, especially when it comes to low-income and very low-income families and folks. The bill in front of you, its intent is to help these low-income folks save energy costs. It helps Oregon save energy overall with more efficient measures, and the bill will also create jobs. I want to briefly maybe point out Section 4 of the bill and the fiscal there of $4 million. The Governor's Office is working with the Department of addressing this, and we are hoping that we can drastically reduce the fiscal through amendments, if not bring it all the way down to zero.
Well, a question about that. So this would be a fund set up in the Department, correct?
That's correct.
And so is there any money coming through the stimulus package that can go into that fund?
Chair Dingfelder, yes, indeed, but I will leave it to these folks here who can talk about this in more detail.
Because I'm sure many of us up here with $4 million in the general fund, our eyes went wide open, but my understanding is that they're going to be looking at other funds. So if either of you can want to address that, that would be great.
Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, I'm Peggy McGuire. I'm the Community Resources Division Administrator at Oregon Housing and Community Services, and the Low-Income Energy Weatherization Program is in our department, or in our division of our department. We understand that presently we have $38 million in low-income energy weatherization program funds coming to us. We're not exactly sure at this precise moment in time how we can utilize those funds. We have some guesses about that. So some of this money will be able to supplant the part of the $4 million that was in the governor's recommended budget. We're not sure at this exact moment how much.
So $38 million. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's promising. So did you have any other comments that you want to make?
I do. I have some additional comments.
Yeah.
And Dan came along as my expert in case I get stuck and you ask me a question that I can't answer. Green building and energy saving technology is just, it's amazing to me. It's moving at the speed of light. It's just like the computer technology that we saw moving by great leaps and bounds in the last few decades. This bill that we are proposing will ensure that households of even the most modest means are able to help us reduce the energy consumption, and will also save energy from their budgets by implementing the measures that are available or will be available as the technologies change. The idea being that if they can reduce their energy costs, they can afford to use those funds to buy food and pay rent and medicine and all the things that they need to for basic life expenses. The most vulnerable members of our community are disproportionately burdened by high energy costs. For example, energy analysts assume that if you're paying more than 6% of your household income for your utilities, that you are energy burdened. Over half the people who are making 60% of the median income and below are paying 15% of their income for energy, and the most vulnerable population are paying up to 44% of their income. Most of the different climate change initiatives that we have don't set aside specific measures to ensure that the low-income community and the most vulnerable members of our community are brought along on all these different programs. They just kind of assume that we have the opportunity to move them along just like everyone else, which is not exactly the case. So the Matchmaker program really is going to equalize those opportunities. We have a series of things that need to be addressed by the Matchmaker program, which is what we call Senate Bill 201. And primarily they revolve around two issues, that households with these limited incomes pay a higher proportion of their income on energy, and that housing that's either owned or rented by families of modest means represents a significant contribution to any strategy that we have to achieve increases in energy efficiency. An example of that is 429,000 of the units of the existing housing stock, which is approximately a third of our existing housing stock, is occupied by people who make 60% of the median income or below. So leaving out a third of our existing housing stock as we make changes in energy technology would significantly impact our ability to reach the goals that we have for the next 10, 20, 30 years for reducing our carbon footprint. Primarily, the program will provide funding for affordable housing developers to fund green energy efficiency assessments when they're designing projects, and this will encourage some market transformation. It will allow access to fundamental technology improvements for existing weatherization assistance programs. It will dedicate resources to place advanced technology in publicly funded housing during the development stage rather than doing costly retrofits after the fact. We'll fund conservation education for housing consumers and providers both. If we have the technology that's available, our developers have to be able to use that technology, and there's no point in implementing the technology if the consumers of the housing don't know how to utilize it to its most efficient measures. So that education piece is essential. It will provide skills training to the development partners to ensure that they can install the products as well as analyze the cost-benefit analysis of installing the products. To increase the number of existing housing units that we have weatherized under the service delivery models presently, Mr. Elliott is in charge of our weatherization program, and we actually in Oregon have a cutting-edge program that's recognized nationally, so we're excited about being able to expand that through our current service delivery mechanisms. And lastly, it will provide public dollars utilized in these programs with matching and leveraged funds that will be not only funds from private resources, but possibly in-kind contributions, such as you may have a hardware company that wants to donate windows or doors, or someone who wants to donate testing equipment. So we'll use those kind of matches to increase the resources that are available. And I just had some interesting figures for you that for each low-income weatherization dollar spent, regardless of the county in which it's spent, another $1.11 is generated within the state. And similarly, for each job that's associated with weatherization program, with our weatherization program, it produces another 1.66 jobs across Oregon. And with that, I'll just thank you for the ability to present this to you today and offer the opportunity to answer any questions that you may have.
Great. And do you want to talk about the other handout from the community partners?
Well, actually, we have a partner who's going to testify, someone from the community formerly known
Michael
as
Anderson
Community
is
Development.
Right. Okay. So he'll talk about
that. So he'll talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Obviously, we'll be talking to you more about that $4 million fiscal part in there.
All right.
And Michael Anderson from Oregon Opportunity Network, formerly known as Community Development Network, right?
Yes.
That's what threw me off there, Michael.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. My name is Michael Anderson, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Opportunity Network. The Oregon Opportunity Network is a trade association of 41 nonprofit, community-based housing providers that serve working Oregonians, seniors, and people with disabilities who the private market does not. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 201, the Housing Community Services Proposed Energy Matchmakers Program. Senate Bill 201 is a good bill for many reasons. First of all, the bill is part of a larger and much-needed market transformation towards a greener, more environmentally sustainable society. Second, the bill will provide immediate relief to low-income Oregonians who are currently facing severe financial challenges to meet the cost of monthly utilities. Third, the Energy Matchmakers Program will increase the durability and sustainability of the state's current stock of publicly invested housing. Fourth, the program is an ideal vehicle for educating the public about energy efficiency in terms of the immediate personal financial benefits, but perhaps more importantly, in terms of our collective self-interest to address global warming. Fifth, the program will create green collar jobs, and we all know how important job creation is right now as we look at the potential revenue impacts for the state. I want to expand a bit on the impact on our residents in particular, because I don't think that this can be emphasized enough, the challenges that low-income people face in affordable housing. With the affordable housing that we have in this state and across the country, the rents get to a certain level, but not low enough for those who are seniors and people with disabilities unless they have a particular federal subsidy that can get them to a rent that's truly in the affordable level. So what does that mean? Well, people take the lower rents that my members provide because they're better than the market, and it gives them more opportunity in their budget to make healthier choices. But as energy costs have gone up, I know that many residents living in my member properties are making awful decisions, decisions no one should need to make, between do I pay my electricity, do I pay my gas, do I put food on the table, do I get new clothes for kids for school, do I get my medicine. I have a friend who lives in one of my members' housings up in Portland. Last winter, he lost 17 pounds. He stands at around 6'1", and usually he's at around 140. He doesn't have 17 pounds to lose. He lost that weight because he had to cut back on food because of the oil spike prices from last winter. Now, we're in a little bit of better situation as far as the pricing goes, but that general dynamic of people who have no give in their budget right now are prime targets for that impact that is raising utility prices. So this program is going to not only do all those things in terms of getting to the greener Oregon we want, to be a job creation program, to preserve and sustain the housing that we already have, but this is going to provide immediate relief, literally put bread on the table for people right now who are making unconscionable choices. The Energy Makers program, I'm also sure, will be immediately effective because it's expanding the current weatherization program that the state runs. As they talked about, the program's very successful. I want to testify on my members' behalf. They use the program. It works well. It is efficient. This bill will put resources through a program that's already there. This is not creating something new. It's giving adequate funding to a program that makes a difference already. Why this is particularly important as you wrestle with the fiscal impact, and I know it's a wrestling match, they're very tough decisions in front of you, is that this bill, if we can find some federal funds to match it, it remains a good bill. If it's an unfunded mandate, it becomes something very complicated for my members, because we know we need to provide this relief to our residents. At the same time, without resources to do it, especially in this current environment, it's very hard to get from that intention to that reality. So I very much look forward to see what's in the federal package and how that's going to help close this gap. But I really want to urge this committee to understand the intentions of this bill work best with funding to make those intentions real. My members, the nonprofit housing providers like the community partners for affordable housing who submitted that letter, have been nationally recognized leaders in green building practices for nearly the last decade. In Oregon, these nonprofit community members are the talk of the nation as far as community development and green practices. We are ready and willing to be leaders with the state in greening of Oregon. SB 201 is a welcome addition to the toolbox of community and affordable housing development. We encourage the committee to support this bill. I welcome any questions.
Questions? Senator Bogus, Senator House? A quick one about how this would work, dovetail with the Energy Trust of Oregon's programs for weatherization. Do you have any sense?
Yes. Generally speaking, the nonprofit housing developers are much more successful in using the OHCS weatherization program, both in terms of the return, and I will be in deep water swimming here as far as the depth of my knowledge, but in terms of the return dollar for dollar that you get from making the improvements under the weatherization program are a lot higher than the Energy Trust at a scale of well over 10-1, but I can't give the exact scale. It's significant to the point that for nonprofit housing developers, the weatherization program is vastly preferred to Energy Trust. So that's why I'm so confident I know it will work, because it's a proven program that hits the mark for affordable housing.
Thank you. Did you want to come up and address that as well?
Yes, thank you.
I have a feeling.
I'm going
to
throw him,
throw him
a lifeline.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Peggy McGuire again for the record. The Energy Trust of Oregon generally targets individuals whose incomes are above 60%, but below, I think, it is 80%. Okay. And our program targets folks whose income is 60% or below median income. So there's the income level of the residents, but then there's the other piece is that most of our programs have as their first and primary concern the health and safety measures of the housing. So if we're talking about rehabbing existing housing, then what happens first is we go in and we secure the envelope and make sure the housing is safe and habitable, and then we begin installing the energy-saving measures. And if I am correct in my assessment of ETO, that their program has energy-saving measures that they install, and those measures are the primary issue because they have to have dollar-for-dollar kilowatt savings.
Okay. That clarification is helpful because I do know, I want to make sure we're not duplicating
Absolutely.
Existing programs
No.
here. Any other questions? Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill, Senate Bill 201? Okay. If seeing none, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 201 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 195. Beth, read the bill, please.
Senate Bill 195 exempts wave energy projects from minimum standards of development if the project generates less than 5 megawatts of electricity, is within Oregon's territorial sea, and has an application submitted to the Department of State Lands by December 31st, 2009. This bill sunsets on January 1st, 2010, and contains an emergency clause taking effect immediately on passage.
Okay, thank you. And we are going to hear from Brenda Bateman, and I think David Bantoff, which I don't see, David. He abandoned you? Why don't you get started, and we'll go find him. Here he is. That was... You finished your sandwich out there, right? Okay. Okay, so we're on Senate Bill 195. Whoever wants to go first, and for the record, please state your name.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dave Antoff, Governor's Policy Advisor. And again, I'll be very brief. These bills that have come before you today, at least a couple of them have highlighted, again, renewable energy, which has been one of the Governor's priorities and focuses. This particular bill has grown out of the focus that the legislature has put into trying to develop a wave energy industry in Oregon through the Oregon Inc. funding for the Oregon Wave Energy Trust. I think you'll hear from them later. And the governor has been supportive of trying to develop collaborative approaches to developing wave energy on the coast. This is an attempt to provide some clarity and ability for some of the initial projects that are currently working towards development to have the ability to move forward in grid connect, which is really the main issue. The legislature passed a bill last session, it was in the 07, in 07 that allowed for non-grid connection for kind of demonstration projects, and this is kind of the next step to allow for return on investment for some of these projects. So I'm not going to get into the details of the bill, but we believe it will help move the industry forward. We're very well positioned. Oregon is, I think, recognized internationally as and certainly in the nation as kind of the leader on wave energy technology and development. We've got the real opportunity to be the first to commercialize the industry here in Oregon, and this bill will help us take those next steps.
Okay. Brenda, and we'll take questions.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is Brenda Bateman. I'm with the Water Resources Department, and I wanted to walk you briefly through Senate Bill 195 this afternoon. Also here in the room are other agency representatives from other agencies and industry representatives, too, if there are more technical questions.
Well,
about
actually,
how the process
is there somebody from the Department of Energy here?
Works.
Yeah, why don't you come up, because just in case there's other questions, unless you were going to make specific testimony as well.
I
yeah, but come up, because we might have some questions. Karen's with the Department of Energy. Go ahead, Brenda.
By way of background, wave energy projects are subject to our department's hydroelectric licensing
Somebody
statute.
Needs to turn off their phone up there.
Madam Chair.
Thanks. We got to put in the pizza fund.
And our ORS 543 allows for the testing of small pilot projects up to 5 megawatts that are not connected to the grid. So the implications of this, all other projects that are connected to the grid would be subject to ORS 543 and the statutes that are in there that were really originally designed for the protection of fish and habitat in Oregon rivers and streams where our hydroelectric projects are located. And so part of that is what we call the No Fish Injury Statute, and that states that the Water Resources Commission shall not approve activity that may result in mortality or injury to anadromous salmon and steelhead resources. Simply put, that projects may not be placed in the ocean if there may be fish injury. And so this, in effect, precludes pilot projects from connecting to the grid and therefore paying for themselves as they go. So the purpose of Senate Bill 195, there are several purposes, and I want to just spend a few minutes walking through the bill here. First would retain the state's authority to protect the environment. So projects would still remain within the department's hydroelectric licensing statutes. They would also be developed under a FERC license. This is Federal Energy Regulatory Commission license at the federal level, which requires adaptive management, and that's mentioned in the bill. But the projects would also be constructed and operated subject to agreement among Oregon's natural resource agencies, and specifically would include the collection of data and measurement to prevent or mitigate environmental impacts. So that's a very important piece of it. We want to learn as we go and mitigate or prevent any danger damage as we go. Also, our commission may adopt rules that protect the natural resources of the state during project development, and that's mentioned in Section 1, Sub 4. So secondly, this allows small pilot projects to connect to the grid. We maintained the language that was in the bill that passed in 2007. It remains at 5 megawatts or less, so these are definitely pilot projects. And this exemption applies to projects that get their applications into the Department of State Lands, which is one of the first agencies that a project like this would go to as they start their project before the end of this calendar year. So it's a very narrow window. We're definitely talking about only pilot projects here before the end of this calendar year or before the adoption of amendments to the Territorial Sea Plan, whichever comes first. Third, we wanted to promote consistency with the land use planning system in Oregon, and that's why we've specifically mentioned the Territorial Sea Plan and its coming amendments in this bill. We wanted to be very sensitive and recognize that that work was going on and will soon be coming into place. Fourth, we wanted to ensure public participation. One of the things we did in the development of this bill was to meet with stakeholders during 2008, and one thing that we heard from coastal communities, was that there needed to be language developed that specifically allowed for their participation. And so you'll see in this bill, Section 1, Sub 3, B, an opportunity for advisory groups to form specifically to have input on siting and locational decisions. And the last piece I wanted to point out was its consistency with the House Joint Memorial 22, which was also passed in the 2007 session. And this was calling for streamlined permitting processes at the federal level and was supportive of wave energy industry and its growth in Oregon. So very briefly, we wanted to talk about the fiscal impacts to the department. We actually see minimal impacts because we already, under our hydroelectric licensing statutes, have a fee schedule in place. And that would apply to these projects as well. So for the initial application, it's $6,500. And then there's an annual fee. It actually goes on a sliding scale. But for projects of 5 megawatts, for example, it would be $3,700 per year. And that's the fee schedule that's already in place. And so we don't see any changes with regard to this bill. It would operate as we have been. When we receive these fees, we actually share them then with our other reviewing agencies who help us review applications. And so a percentage goes to Fish and Wildlife, a percentage goes to DEQ, and then part of it remains with our department. And our cost recovery on these fees is actually higher than for most of our other fee programs. We get a pretty good percent of cost recovery there. And so I'd be happy to take any of your questions.
Okay. Why don't we hear from the Department of Energy first, and then we'll take questions. I'm sure there'll be some.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Karen Chase, and I'm with the Oregon Department of Energy. My department supports this bill. We find that, in general, this the inability to connect to the grid on these pilot projects has been a barrier and a stumbling block for industry to move forward. And we find that Water Resources has done a good job in finding this path toward exempting these small projects. It's difficult for us to know before we know. And this will allow the pilot projects to move forward, grid connect, and then be able to collect the data and the monitoring necessary to be able to meet the rule of no harm to the anadromous fish population.
Okay. So first, before you guys take off, I'm sure there'll be quite a few questions. I know I have a few. Senator Atkinson, I know you had a question.
Dr. Bateman, a couple questions. You listed off in one of the slides that we incorporated, this bill incorporates regulatory streamlining that was part of a memorial. Where is that?
Madam Chair, Senator, it is consistent with House Joint Memorial 22, which is part of your packet and was language that was passed in 2007.
But that's a memorial. That's not a law. We're passing a law.
There was also a bill that was passed in the last session that set up the ORS that we have today, ORS 543-014. I'm sorry, I don't have the bill number from last session.
The bill number is 2925. It's on your SMS sheet.
The problem I have is that testimony, I heard four state agencies and two federal agencies. That doesn't sound like regulatory streamlining to me. Sounds like a lot of big pain in the fanny to locate here. Is that right?
Governor's office, you want to comment on it?
Madam
Chair, all your agencies.
Senator Atkinson, there's certainly a lot of agencies involved, and particularly the federal and state agency overlap because of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission jurisdiction, and then having it be in the territorial sea. So it is a real challenge right now to figure, and then we're trying to figure this out because it's a new siting process that hasn't really occurred because this is the first attempt to do commercial. So that's why we're trying to get ahead of the game and figure out how to streamline the process and create clarity for the industry that what they're going to have to do and whether they're going to be able to get to the end of the
I appreciate
line.
That, but having consulted in this area, we're behind the game because the regulatory streamlining is in San Francisco Bay Area, and certainly I don't think there's a lot of big regulatory streamlining, but the money for all these projects comes out of Dubai. You know, it's off of the South African coast. That's where all the action is. That's where all the capital's going. And the only thing I picked up from the testimony was $6,500 of licensing fees and that probably a 4 or 5 year trail of time to get something cited. Am I wrong to have that impression?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, I think when one of the developers comes forward, they may be able to talk about their impression in terms of how favorable it is to site in the U.S. I think you're right that the U.S., because of the federal overlay, has a lot of challenges around siting these projects. I think that Oregon is ahead of the game in terms of other states. We've signed an MOU with FERC to try and clarify how we're going to work through these projects collaboratively. We've got Oregon Solutions project was developed around Reedsport to try and develop, get everybody in the room together to try and get through a lot of these kind of hurdles around various jurisdictions having a role. But you're right, the bottom line is there's a lot of people, a lot of agencies that have their hands in this, and it's a challenge.
And I'm going to ask you about one more agency, which is ODF&W, since also the federal, you know, it's going to be NOAA Fisheries, but as far as the no fish take rule, and I understand that this is a pilot project, so nobody's here from the department, so I'm assuming you've talked to them or consulted with them.
Madam Chair, ODF&W was part of the crafting of this bill and is one of the reasons that we have the clause in here about Water Resources Commission having the ability to write rules was at their request so that we're able to adapt as we encounter different situations and so that they have an ongoing ability to help with rule writing and protection.
And can you clarify, is that just for the rules for all wave energy projects, or is it just for the pilot projects? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Madam Chair, it would be for the pilot projects that are addressed under this language specifically.
And Madam Chair, I'd add that the only thing that this bill will do that changes the existing state of affairs under the prior legislation that was passed is allow for grid connection of these pilot scale projects. The pilot projects could, under the existing law, be put in as demonstration projects, but they wouldn't be able to get a return and connect to the grid.
So I guess that's why I'm curious about why we need to have another set of rules. I mean, you know, we talk about streamlining a separate set of rules for a pilot project. I would think it would apply to all of the energy projects. But maybe I'm missing something here.
Madam Chair, it's posed there as an opportunity to learn as we go. If we see something developing that was unintended, there's an opportunity for the commission to step in and write rules to correct that.
I see it says may, not shall, so okay. All right, any other questions? Senator Hess. He woke up, so he's going to ask the question now.
Thank you. I think I'm missing a basic point here. Is this designed to attract these projects, or are there some out there that are on deck?
Good question.
Madam Chair, Senator Haas, again, I think you'll hear from some of those folks that are on deck in Oregon. We do have developers and with technologies that are have applied for FERC licenses and are applying through the state process. And this is to provide the ability and clarity in the ability for them to commercialize and grid connect those small pilot projects.
I think we're going to hear from them next, actually. So. All right, thank you. And next up, I will ask Stephanie Thornton from the Oregon Wave Energy Trust, Justin Klurer with Pacific Energy Ventures, and Len Bergstein, Ocean Power Technologies. Okay. Justin, why don't you start off, since you're already seated and ready to go.
First one to the seat. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Justin Klurer. I represent Pacific Energy Ventures. We're a project development firm located here in Oregon, working diligently to get projects in the water. I think just to open up just slightly, I would echo some of the comments earlier that the policy constraints and the regulatory challenges are significant. And I think this particular bill represents one way to take it reduce the impact for some of these early stage pilot projects. We're finding a lot of our work in this sector is around policy. We're actually working with U.S. Department of Energy and FERC and MMS as well to try to figure out where these jurisdictional lines are, who's got the authority, and to try to find out some streamline opportunities to move these projects forward. SB 195 essentially represents a technical fix and allows some of these early stage projects not to have to prove essentially that they are liable for any salmon mortality or injury. Just in closing, and I'll turn it over to my fellow industry partners, I would just say that pilot projects are critical to proving this industry out, and I think that's kind of the stage that we are right now. Is making sure that there is a consistent, appropriate process for moving some of these projects forward. We're actually working with the Oregon Wave Energy Trust, Stephanie here to my right, on developing these regulatory roadmaps. So we understand all the agencies, jurisdictional authorities, both state and federal and local, how they all interact so that we can determine the best path forward that gives the state and the federal government the authority to protect our natural resources while being able to move the industry forward at the same time. So I'll close with that and take any questions if you have them.
Why don't you go ahead and then we'll finish with Len and then we'll see if there's questions for the panel.
Very good. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Stephanie Thornton. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Wave Energy Trust. The Oregon Wave Energy Trust is a nonprofit organization whose mission is the responsible development of the renewable wave energy industry here in Oregon. We're also a part of the Oregon Innovation Council. I'm just going to make my comments extremely brief, building upon Justin's comments and others that you will hear right after me. OET supports SB 195. This is an important milestone, an important bill that will help us overcome some barrier that exists right now for pilot wave energy projects. So as we're developing this new industry, this is very helpful, and we do lend our support to SB 195 as an opportunity to really help advance and move pilot projects forward so we can learn as much from those and aid in decision-making and also the regulatory process as well. So I would be happy to answer any questions and provide any opportunity for OET to be a resource to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here today. Yep. Mr. Bergstein.
Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, my name is Len Bergstein, and I'm here representing Ocean Power Technologies. I have some brief remarks that are printed out, and Ocean Power Technologies is one of the global leaders in wave technology, and we're here in Oregon, and we're going through a permitting process that hopefully will be the learning experience for everybody. I'm here testifying on behalf of Senate Bill 195 for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's a precise tool for a recognized problem. It solves a problem that needs to get solved in order for us to put some buoys in the water. Number two, it codifies best practices. If you read through the sections of the bill, it really explains the way in which we have gone forward with a settlement process and a variety of other activities with local communities to make sure that there is, as Stephanie said, responsible development of wave energy consistent with the community's values. Third, I think it assures that the momentum that you started, the legislature, in terms of the public policies, the tax incentives, the variety of different things that you have put in place to initiate wave energy actually moves forward. It's a narrow exemption. It allows us to put a buoy in the water. If we don't have this, we can't put a buoy in the water, and we don't get to learn the things we want to learn. We'll have one buoy in the water, we hope, in 2010. That'll go to 9. We will grid connect. That will lead to a tremendous amount of knowledge for this state so that we'll understand more about how wave energy and the things that you want to see happen, I think, in terms of renewables, happens. Lastly, I'll say that we're aware of other language that may be presented during the course of this hearing that that talks about the clarifies the roles between the state and local governments in terms of the whole permitting process and whatever. We're happy to work with you to make Senate Bill 195 a better bill if that's the way you'd like to go. So.
Okay. Thank you. Questions, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And let me preface my comment because I'm supportive, but I just have a philosophical question for you. That, I mean, we're spending millions in the state, billions in the region every year to save fish. Why should you be exempt from all of the fish rules when everybody else in the state is not exempt?
Chair Dingfelder and Senator, I don't see any reason why we should be exempt. What we're saying here is that this is a public policy that allows a project to go forward that you've already said you want to see happen. We will be under tremendous amount of there's a tremendous amount of studies that we've already committed to through the process. Everybody will get a chance to kind of look. Quite frankly, if we're killing androgynous fish, we're done. We're out of here. We're just not going to be able to go forward. So, in fact, it's a chance for you and your state agencies to take a look at what happens with wave energy when it actually gets in the water.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Senator Atkinson, and then I'll ask.
Both of you on the for-profit side, do you see Oregon's regulatory environment as a barrier to entry for your competitors?
Madam Chair, Senator, it certainly is a challenge. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The regulatory process for these projects, the fact that wave energy has never been cited before in this country, is a significant challenge. So it is indeed a barrier. What we're trying to do is understand what those challenges are and develop consistent, appropriate policies for wave energy. I think what you're seeing here today is this particular statute that we're talking about is designed for dams in rivers, and what you're doing is applying that statute to a floating device in the ocean, and that's where the disconnect is. So certainly a challenge, and there's a lot more to be done on that front.
Chair Dingfelder and Senator, There are a bunch of overlapping regulatory hurdles, mostly at the federal level. So the real issue, I think, Senator, is how do we deal with a variety of different agencies, in some cases arm wrestling between a couple of agencies within the federal, whether it's MMS or the FERC, with Mineral Management Services. There are a number of regulatory hurdles overall to getting this done, and there are a number of financial hurdles to getting this done the way you want to. That's why there really has to be, I think, a strong statement by the state of Oregon that you want to see this move forward and you want to see at least the momentum continue into this pilot stage and to start grid connecting. That's really what we're all about here. It's clearly what Ocean Power Technologies is very impressed with the state of Oregon's statement that you want to see WAVE go. So we're really trying to make this happen, and that's why we're supporting this bill.
One more question.
Another question.
For both of you. I don't know how your companies that you both represent are capitalized, but in this difficult market of finding capital, I would assume your capital isn't from Oregon. Are you having difficulty attracting capital from out of state to do business in Oregon?
Go ahead, Mike. Madam Chair and Senator, I'd be happy to kind of outline that for you in with more specificity than I've got right at the top of my head. We've OPT went out for an offering in the London market and capitalized well. It also received some other funds from some other partners, and so they're very well capitalized. They're, as a matter of fact, that's allowed them to attract relations with some other businesses in WAVE technology who've wanted to come to them, not because we're a bunch of pretty faces, but because we've got some capital in this market. So the fact of the matter is that OPT is well capitalized enough to make this operate, and that's why they're pursuing. We do go after federal appropriations in order to help make some of the early stages, as Justin was saying earlier, move a little bit quicker. It helps, I think, we'll be going after appropriations and stimulus packages at the federal government in order to migrate the work down to the coast. And we're in the process now of beginning to make relationships with businesses in coastal communities, particularly in Coos area, that could be able to kind of not only fabricate but deploy and maintain these. So the quicker we can kind of move this to the coast, I think the quicker the company will like it. So we'll be going after some public monies.
Questions?
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, Madam Chair, Senator, I would just echo those comments and say that certainly, money's going to go to where the least resistance is for it to provide a return. And I think what we're focused on today here in a public-private partnership is how do you set up that framework for this industry to really thrive. So we're not at the point of picking and choosing where funds are going, whether it's one energy technology or another. What we're really trying to do is set it up so that WAVE Energy's got a stake in that game.
I have one last question, which is how does Oregon's sort of regulatory process compared to other coastal states? And I don't know if either of your companies are dealing with other states and trying to permit projects, but I'm curious about, Washington, California. I don't know if this is happening
right
down the coast, in the Gulf Coast.
It is, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I would say it's actually relatively similar in other parts of the country. So like I mentioned, we're doing some work with U.S. Department of Energy to try to coordinate the coastal states and their processes.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have more information here in the coming months. We'd be happy to share that with you. But it's really the same issues. You've got existing hydro laws that were designed for dams and rivers being applied to the ocean, and there's a disconnect there. Whether we're talking about the West Coast, the East Coast, or even some of the Gulf states, same rules apply. Certainly here in the Northwest, we have more hydro resource, so the regulations are more stringent. But it's the same impact, whether we're talking about how to link the two, the state and the federal authorities.
Chair Dingfelder, if I may. When I've heard our chairman talk about this, it really hasn't been that there's been a vagaries of regulatory issues between the West Coast states. What he's concerned about is the way in which the utilities commissions look at the linking between ourselves, the rate structure, and our ability to kind of come in at a kind of grid parity and a rate that is acceptable to the utilities that buy us. If nobody buys our power, we've got buoys in the water. So the issue that you're asking is very important, but the real question question isn't necessarily that we have a competitive advantage over California or Washington State, for example, or Hawaii or New Jersey, where we have buoys in the water. It's really a question that has to do with how do the utilities companies, how do the utilities commissions look at the rate structure and how easy is it for us to sell our power.
Thank you for that good clarification. Other questions? Looks like Senator Boquist, I should know.
Yeah, just a question. Yeah. We could have the PUC talk about this issue at some point in the future.
We could. I don't know if either of you, actually, we should probably ask the Department of Energy if there's been coordination with the PUC. Maybe we can have Department of Energy come back up. Do you want to comment? I'm assuming you've been working with the PUC on this.
Madam Chair, I have not been working with.
Okay. Somebody from the governor's office was here. We'll follow up and get that information. It's a good question. I know the PUC is working, you know, with all the alternative technologies as far as connecting to the grid and such. I've certainly talked to them about it, but we'll make sure the committee staff follows up and we'll get either somebody here or to send us some information. Okay, thank you very much for coming today. And we have one last group of folks I'm going to call up, Rob Bovette, Terry Thompson, and North Cheatham. Is North Cheatham here?
Yes.
Yeah. Recognized you from... You're here for the Klamath.
Yes, the CA.
Okay.
You're the middle.
So are we going to prosecute him?
I know, we heard from you already in another committee this morning.
Are you going to throw him in jail, or what's the deal?
You just get the wrong door here, Rob.
Yeah.
Why don't you go first?
Okay. For the record, Madam Chair, Senators, Rob Bovette, Lincoln County District Attorney. I'll kind of skip over what I was going to talk about and kind of get right to the heart of the matter. As the author of the statute being proposed to be amended here and as the author of the aforementioned House Joint Memorial 22, I have some strong opinions about this bill. But instead of kind of going line by line and attacking it, which is not what I want to do, I do want to state a couple things right up front. One, I do agree with the previous testimony that this bill is the next logical step. When we crafted the statute in 2007, we wanted to move incrementally. We wanted to test these devices. That statute is what allowed us to put buoys in the ocean and test them, and we learned a lot, and that's great. I also believe this bill can be fixed. I do, however, take issue with some of the statements made by the Water Resources Department in their testimony, and I won't bore you with, if you really want to know the regulatory environment, I could spend an hour or two doing that, but
okay,
it's complicated.
I can't hold my committee that long.
Yes. Suffice to say, you know.
We'll have a mutiny.
Some of us are staying out of kindness.
I know. And I promise them we'd be done by 4:30. So.
Yes, and I'll keep it brief. One of the statements here I did want to clarify, there's a statement here that FERC has jurisdiction over wave energy projects located from 0 to 12. That's simply not true. FERC has asserted they have jurisdiction, but MMS disagrees, and for what it's worth, I do as well. I do recognize that Water Resources Department did meet with stakeholders. They went through six drafts that we looked at. But they didn't hear my concerns then, so I'm expressing them now. What's missing from this bill primarily is local siting. If we want to use a model, as they stated in previous correspondence, that really reflects kind of the land use planning type of model, that means we have to have local siting. I'm sorry, no offense meant to the departments here in Salem, but they're not capable of finding the right sites for these devices with causing the minimum possible damage to the environment and the minimum negative impact to our fisheries, which in my county is about $100 million a year industry. And so what I have proposed and passed out to you is some proposed amendments that would insert local siting, if enacted, into ordinance, which is what our county has done, and provide for the siting decisions to be made locally. That has worked well for us. As I mentioned, we're not just talking the talk, we're walking the walk. We're the ones that got the buoys out in the ocean. So what I have for you is some proposed amendments that would make that and move forward to the next logical step. Would love to answer any questions you have, but I think that's what I'd like to say.
Okay. Well, Terry, why don't you go ahead, and then we'll see if there's any questions.
Terry Thompson, Lincoln County Commissioner. If you look back, Phil Ward sent me a letter when this bill first came out, and he says, promotes consistency with a comprehensive land use planning system. The consistency of the land use planning system is it's generated at the local level. And it, without this amendment, the land use planning is generated in Salem. So his whole premise for the bill is basically wrong. And there was, inside the bill, it also says that they would like an advisory committee. I've sat on enough of these advisory committees already. It just is frustrating, and every one of you has probably been participated in one of these. It's a smokescreen, is what it is. And for that reason, it's that part needs to be codified, that we actually get down to have local government or local entities, such as our fishing industry, which is implemented under county ordinance, to be a part of this, because they're the big losers. The real impact of local ocean is only going to be felt on that first mile or two, or excuse me, wave energy is going to be felt on that first mile or two of the ocean. We're more than willing to sit down and help these people get in place, but we want to be at the table, and that's why the amendments are brought forward.
Thank you. Mr.
Cheney? Chair Dingfelder, Senators Boquist, Senator Atkinson, and Senator Haas. I'm Hood River. I live 150 miles from the coast. I'm here to represent what I feel is the public advocacy position of what is best in the public interest, and I have independently come to the same conclusion these other gentlemen have about local control. Let me go through some of my concerns. For one thing, I will tell you that I was prepared to... did I state my name? North Cheatham? Okay, I'm sorry. I know we have to do preliminaries. First of all, I wanted to speak on behalf of being in support of Senate Bill 195. However, it has become apparent to me that there are unique attributes to wave energy that are not shared by wind, biomass, solar, and other forms of renewable power. These have to do with the fact that wave energy is associated with exclusively one area of the state. Wind, biomass, solar can in varying degrees be done in multiple locations. The second thing is that wave energy, utilization of wave energy is inevitably associated with other important pillars of the local economy. I'm thinking about fishing, I'm thinking about tourism. And that is not the case with other forms of renewables, not to the same extent anyway. The third thing is that limited capacities of the individual generators will necessitate very large commercial arrays. I've heard somewhere, and the people that were here prior to me could fill you in on this, but I believe at the current state of technology, they project 5 acres being necessary. No, 30 acres being necessary for 5 megawatts. That's a fairly small amount of power, and to see these things into commercial use, we're talking about probably hundreds of acres. Insofar as that is concerned, I think that the failing of the bill as it's currently worded is that local authority is limited to an advisory role here. In terms of the attributes of this form of power and the impacts on the economy, that the local authorities, counties, maybe OPAC, the individual city jurisdictions and so forth, ports, should have a more than just an advisory role. And the state's role should actually be to facilitate local authority, not preempt it. Now, when you add the federal agencies in and the state agencies in, this becomes a mishmash which may be virtually unworkable. But just the same, I believe that because of the unique attributes of wave energy, the local authorities should have a more important role than this bill provides them. The bill is, in my opinion, and I've read several of these bills on energy in this session, I see that the bill is poorly written, repetitive, and difficult to understand. Specifically...
you won't tell our bill drafter that.
Pardon me?
that our poor bill drafter. Hopefully he's not listening.
Okay. If there's something to this dead fish rule, it should be mentioned in this bill somewhere instead of just referred to indirectly. This should be explained. I mean, that this is being taken from a bill that was written, a set of regulations that were written for rivers. There are a number of conditions attached to this bill, but in my opinion, they are not drawn out as clearly as they could be.
Can I ask you to wrap up because we're running out of time?
Yeah, I am wrapping up. I've just moved to the call of action section here. Okay. What I would like to do, I would like to see SB 195 revised to mandate much greater project siting and control through local jurisdictions. Please fix this bill so I can support it. And by the way, my testimony is, it sounds like I'm just part of the team here, but I came up with my opinions.
I know these guys never saw you before. They told me.
Very likely.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? I'm losing my voice.
One thing real quickly, add one
quickly.
Thing. I did in draft amendments add a grandfather clause that would effectively grandfather two of the projects that are moving forward right now and are using settlement agreements. So I wanted to be clear, in particular, OPT's project at Reedsport would be grandfathered in effectively based on the Dash amendments I propose.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions for the panel? Or these gentlemen? It's not the panel. Thank you, and I'm sure that Water Resources Department will be following up with you on this. Anybody else that would like to testify in Senate Bill 195? I couldn't tell. Was there somebody back there? No. Yes, Joe, is that you? Okay, if you put your hand up, you're watch out. So with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 195. I'm going to ask the Water Resources Department of Energy, to connect up with ODOT, Oregon Department of Energy and Water Resources Department, to hook up with the local folks. We are not quite adjourned yet because we are fortunate to have the director of the Northwest National Marine Renewable Energy Center here, Robert Posh, who's going to provide us with a quick update. He's only got about 10 minutes, but he's from Oregon State University, so we'd like to thank him for coming today, and he's going to provide us with a quick update on wave energy in general. So this is good context for this bill. Appreciate you being here today, and thank you for your patience and waiting for the hearing.
Thank you, Madam Chair and distinguished committee members. For the record, my name is Bob Pasch. I'm director of the Northwest National Marine Renewable Energy Center and a faculty member in the College of Engineering at Oregon State University. And I'd like to make clear at the start here that I'm not here today for advocacy of any kind. My presentation today is strictly informational to let you know what we're doing with your money and how we're using that to grow and essentially bring more money into the state. Two major OSU marine energy milestones that I want to talk about. The first is the in-ocean testing of the joint venture OSU-CBT Blue Ray wave energy conversion device, which was tested off the coast.
If your phone, that could be your phone.
My phone is turned off.
Okay, then somebody else who's sitting up there might have their phone on. Is that you? Okay. Just a reminder to please turn your phones off, because even if you have it on buzz, it affects our sound system. Thank you.
So in September, OSU and CPT, in a joint venture, deployed a 10-kilowatt device off the coast of Newport. It was out there for 5 days. It produced electricity for 5 days. It was collected on board the Pacific Storm, which is OSU research vessel, so there was no anchoring or mooring, permanent situation. And so OSU is very proud of that that step forward in development of devices. The more important thing that I want to talk to you about today is the establishment of the Northwest National Marine Renewable Energy Center by the U.S. Department of Energy. And the NNMREC is a partnership between OSU and the University of Washington, as well as the National Renewable Energy Laboratory. The funding level is $6.25 million over the next 5 years, $1.25 million a year. Of that, $1 million is staying at Oregon State University, and $250,000 is going to the University of Washington each year. OSU is a leader, world leader in wave energy technology. The University of Washington has significant capabilities in tidal and current energy generation, and so it was a great partnership. There were two centers established, the Northwest Center and then a second center in Hawaii. And I'm proud to say that from a technical standpoint, we had a very good showing in a competitive grant situation with the U.S. Department of Energy. Important for you to know is that the funding for that required a one-to-one match. And so OSU had to come up with $5 million to match the DOE funding. And a big part of that was the $3 million capital funding that the legislature gave to OSU for the wave energy test and demonstration site. That was key. We also had support from the Oregon Wave Energy Trust and in that match. The National Center is not about device development. The National Center is about testing and evaluation. Our goal is to provide unbiased evaluation of the technology and the impact on the environment, and as such, provide the public with the information that they need to make decisions about wave energy technology. Part of what the center will produce is a wave energy test and demonstration site. The RFP for that, request for proposals, is in OSU Contracts Office right now. We will be letting that shortly. The goal is to have the first device, or first test berth, designed and in the water by June of 2010. That will be a floating test berth, not a grid connected. Our idea there is that we can move that anywhere in the state where we want to test devices. So if we want to see the impact of a wave energy device on the wave climate in Coos Bay, we can move it down there and do that. The other things that are happening as part of the center are performance modeling, reliability and survivability assessment, substantial work in physical impact on sediment transport. We know that these devices cannot impact the shoreline. We need to know how much energy can we take out of the ocean before we have an impact, and limit array size and device size to where that doesn't happen. And then there's a significant amount of money that is going to the Hatfield Marine Science Center for biological impact studies, impact on fisheries, on birds, on marine mammals. The establishment of the center has allowed us to be competitive for federal earmarks. We have an earmark into the FY09 budget for $2.45 million. That is to help support the wave energy test and demonstration site. Our federal relations people are working right now on inserting into the federal budget for FY10 a $5 million request. It's a joint request between OSU and the University of Washington, and we'll have the support of both congressional delegations. And that is for, again, more work toward test and demonstration site and a future, perhaps, grid connection, more biological studies, and outreach and community engagement at the for the coastal communities. I've been talking with the Department of Energy in Washington, D.C., their FY09 budget, well, their FY, this, the first year this is funded out of the FY08 budget, which for marine hydrokinetics is $10 million. In the FY09 budget, if they ever get off the continuing resolution that they're operating at now, that's bumped to $30 million. They're expecting a 3- to 5-fold increase in that for FY10. So we're well positioned for future competitive grants and bringing more federal money in to support the center and to support development, testing, and impact evaluation in the state. Thank you.
Thank you. And I really appreciate the hard work you're doing in making wave energy more viable here, and also helping attract, make sure we get industry that wants to come here and put buoys in our waters. Wanted to see if either of you had questions for...
Real quick.
Yeah.
Professor, In 07, I had a client that was in my real life that was involved in wave energy, and that was before the center was put into effect. Could you tell me, in the future, a new project, a new technology, a new group comes and they want to test their technology at Oregon State, is there a, what's the lead time that it would take to get into the center? How much money should they budget to get into the center to get through the wave tank and all the various testing? Do you have any bulk? How many projects can you handle at once to test?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, at this point we haven't figured out the financials. The purpose of the test and demonstration site is to demonstrate commercial technologies, and so commercial developers would come in, connect to our test berth, and test in the ocean. We don't know yet how much that's going to cost. We're still in the development stages of designing the test berth, and until we know how much it's going to cost us, we don't really know how much to charge. Our timeline is to get the first of those test berths in the water in in the summer of 2010, a second berth in the water in 2011, and a third in the water in 2012. We won't be able to do anything before the summer of 2010, but if you have people that are interested in contracting with us, we'd be very interested in talking with them.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Any other questions? Thank you for coming here today, and we'll look forward to more updates from the center. And are you, by any chance, is there any research funding in the stimulus package? I know there is some research money.
I know that they're estimating that there's going to be $800 million go to the Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy.
You don't know yet. It's too early, probably.
It's too early to know how that's going to filter down into marine hydrokinetics.
Okay, great. Well, thank you again for coming here today. We'll look forward to hearing more from you. And with that,
thank you, Senator.
I will close the adjourn the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources Committee. We'll see you next week.